Podcast.
November is Epilepsy Awareness Month. Now, epilepsy is one of the most common neurological conditions in the world, and yet it's still very misunderstood and faces a lot of stigma. Many people with epilepsy don't like telling their story to others, and so it just lurks in the background and they suffer in silence. I'm pleased to be able to be speaking today to Helen Butler, who works in our web team. And Helen's speaking about her own personal experience of epilepsy and her journey through brain surgery and the recovery process. And I'm just so pleased that Helen reached out and asked if we would cover this topic and was prepared to talk about it and her own experiences so openly. It's an amazing story, and I'm just in awe of Helen's determination. So here's Helen to tell us more about this, and hopefully it'll build just a bit more awareness of what some people have to deal with. So I'm joined by Helen. Welcome, Helen. Thank you so much for agreeing to come and talk about epilepsy and build awareness. So I think you class yourself as somebody who's formerly had epilepsy. Perhaps start by, I mean, maybe before we get into the sort of questions we've talked about, maybe explain to people why that's the case, because I suspect there's some people that will wonder how you can, can you actually treat epilepsy and manage the symptoms like that?
Yeah, well, good morning, Pepper. And I've had epilepsy since the age of 9, and it's never been well controlled. So in 2015, I was asked by my neurologist if I would go through epilepsy surgery, which was about 4 years of testing. And so I went through it. I was a bit apprehensive to start because I'd done it before, and it found it was in a different part of the brain. But this time I've been able to get more tests, and they've found the focal point is in a good part of the brain to operate. So I went for brain surgery in 2018. If the focal point is only in one point and it doesn't go all over the brain, that means you're a good candidate for surgery, and that's the reason why I'm doing so well at the moment.
I mean, that's fantastic and news to hear, and we'll get on to talk a little bit more about how treatments and things have moved on. But maybe for those that don't know, tell us a little bit more about what epilepsy is and how it can affect your body and your lifestyle.
Well, it's a very unpredictable condition. It could just happen. Some people will know on the day they're going to have a seizure. Sometimes not at all, and you just a lot of people are unaware that they're having seizures, and so it's quite dangerous because you could be walking across the road and all of a sudden it hits and you end up in a seizure, which has happened to me a couple of times. I've ended up walking in front of a van in Irvine and having to do an emergency stop. It's caused by sort of electrical activity in the brain, which goes a bit haywire, really, a bit like a short circuit. And then whatever part of the brain it affects, that's really how it produces itself. So what I used to do is have daydreams, but then when in my 20s they started to go into falls, so I would just fall straight down and break bones and all sorts of things. So that's the reason why I was put forward for surgery, because the more it's the less controlled it is, the higher risk of SUDEP there is, which is, means it's actually a fatality for epilepsy. So it's quite serious.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm as you describe it, I mean, there's not just that the condition itself could kill you essentially, but you know, like you describe stepping out in front of a vehicle or something. I mean, as a child, we had a family friend who had epilepsy, and he was actually involved in a hit and run that we believe was a result of him having a seizure and then being hit. So I mean, it's
that's quite debilitating in terms of your independence, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. Part of the reason that I moved up here, because there weren't train tracks and busy roads to go to Glasgow to do my job, because I started having to work from home because I couldn't get into the workplace safely. So that's why I applied for the job up here. And it did help. I mean, the environment did control my seizures to an extent, but it was still, one or two a week that I'd be
Yeah.
getting, as opposed to 25 a week.
Oh, that, yeah. I mean, that's a big
Yeah.
improvement, but that's a lot, and that is quite, that's a massive impact on your quality of life.
Definitely, and everyone around you as well, because my husband had to become a carer, and he couldn't go out to sea to do his job, and so it has a knock-on effect, and it does impact on you.
And it's, I believe, from the information you've given me, it's 1 in 97 people in Scotland have the condition. I mean, that's quite a lot, probably. It's more than I expected.
Yeah, it's one of the most common conditions in the world. Well, neurological conditions in the world. But yeah, there's still a lot of stigma behind it, and people don't really like to tell people that they're suffering from it, which is hard, I think.
And I mean, you've described what can be some pretty extreme seizures and very disturbing if you're suffering it, and I imagine that adds to the stigma. Is it disturbing for those that experience it as friends or colleagues? But I mean, the symptoms can be mild as well. So if somebody hasn't told you they've got epilepsy, they might display some what could seem some strange behavior, but actually be connected to their condition, couldn't they?
Yes, a lot of people could just hide it and just say, I was just a bit distracted, or they get away with it because they don't like to highlight it.
Yeah. So I mean, if somebody's just looking a bit confused or staring into space, that could be them experiencing a mild seizure, isn't it? It's,
Yes.
and I think, I mean, we should point out it's important they're called seizures and not fits or anything else. That's the
That's right.
terminology, because I
Yeah.
think that's important, and you've been keeping me right in the prep for this. So I think, if we're doing the awareness building, it's worth us saying that, because that's important for us to be mindful of how people who've got the condition, want to refer to it. So, I mean, maybe tell us. I mean, you've touched on some of the implications for the workplace. Are there any more things that you found? Because I mean, and you working on sort of website development and things. So it's, you're working on computer screens and things. Is that an issue for you?
Not now. It used to be when I was at uni, when we had the big CRT monitors, but because now they're the flicker rates are set a lot higher on these, so you don't really notice it a lot. So I don't I think it used to be, but now with newer technology and how it's moved on, it has helped.
And how did you find the support in the workplace? And I mean, you've already said you moved location of your job. I mean, that's a pretty big impact, but how have you found it? And obviously, you've undergone some significant treatment. There's a lot that goes on in appointments in the run up to that, and then recovery. Have you found the support there that you needed?
Yes, no, it's been great. If I wasn't feeling well, with just the epilepsy, then I had the reasonable adjustments put into place so that I could work from home if I wasn't feeling well. And which we're all experiencing at the moment. But and then as for the treatments and things, I just let my manager know, and he would just put that into HR, and it just got dealt with. So it was okay for me. And I
And
had
you,
4 months off as well. So yeah.
yeah, and I mean, totally understandable. I mean, major surgery to go through, and I mean, I don't know if you've always been as open about the condition. I mean, you're very good to come and talk to me about it for epilepsy awareness. But I mean, is that, have you always felt that way, or has that been a something that's come latterly?
I think when I was a child, I was quite apprehensive because it wasn't as well known about. So if you would open up about it, you tend to, not be, don't want to be my friend anymore, things like that. But as I got older, I've realised that the people that I wanted to be in my life would stay in my life if I told them and I was honest with them. So it's kind of worked like that, and I've made so many like friends and relationships through it. And
And I
even my
mean,
husband I met because of my epilepsies.
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a nice happy part to it then.
Yes, yeah.
And how have colleagues been with that? Because presumably they knew you were going off for your surgery and things as well, and.
No, my colleagues are great. They've even got family members with epilepsy, so they're quite understanding. And they're just because what I tend to do if I'm sitting down and I have a seizure in the office, I just really sort of do some sort of humming or do something weird, and they just let me get on with it.
Oh, it's good that they're supportive and understanding. But I
De
mean,
definitely, yes.
you've said you've now gone through that treatment. Tell us that sort of what that involved and what that's meant for your quality of life.
Well, like I said, it was in 2015, and my neurologist asked me if I wanted to do it again, because in 2007 and 8 I went through the surgery testing and they weren't too sure where the seizures were coming from, because I said before, when they present themselves in a different way, it can mean it's coming in a different part of the brain. So the way they started to develop, it was like it was in the back of the brain, but the focal point, they actually found out through all the testing they did again this time, that it was just in my temporal lobe and my hippocampus, which was a good place to operate in. And so for the testing, I had to have an MRI, an EEG, a 5-day video EEG, and that's when they take you off your medication to try and get you to have a seizure, and then they inject an isotope into you so it freezes the activity in the brain. And they put you in a CT scanner so they can see where it's coming from, and it highlights it. Then I had a PET scan, which monitors the amount of glucose that's going through the brain, and so they can see like how it flows, your activity goes through there. A functional MRI, which was to test my speech and language, because they don't want to operate anywhere where they can affect that part of the brain. And that's on my left side, and my operation was done on the right, so I was quite lucky there. And I had to go down to Birmingham to have a MEG scan, and that was to pinpoint where they want needed to put the invasive electrodes. I was in for 7 days, and they put electrodes into my brain, so I actually had to have surgery to have surgery.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, that was interesting. I found out a lot about my seizures by doing that, and I had 3 seizures during that week. It's the same as the video EEG and the 5-day thing. So they do that, but they put them in the brain instead. And then they needed to do psychological and psychiatric evaluations. That's to test your cognitive functioning. So do that before and after the surgery to compare the two. And a psychiatric evaluation, which was see if I'm able to cope with going through surgery, because some people won't be able to deal with like the post-traumatic stress and things like that.
I mean, that just the testing is an ordeal in itself. I mean,
It
that's
is, yeah. That was 3 years of
yeah.
testing. Yeah.
Wow. And imagine that. I mean, there must be a sense of that's quite a physical and ordeal, but I imagine psychologically, the will they won't they be able to operate, and the fact
Yeah.
that you're having surgery on your brain to have, as you say, to have surgery on your brain, that's also quite stressful in itself.
Yeah, 'cause
How
well,
was
that's what put me off the first time when I went in 2007 and 8, because they wanted to do it then, but I wasn't too sure about getting electrodes put on my brain and what the implications were.
Yeah,
So,
I bet. I think we'd
yeah.
all be a bit worried about that.
It was through social media. There's a group on social media called Epilepsy Surgery Friends, and I'm actually the admin of it at the moment, along with a nice friendly group of people. But when I was just the member there, I was getting the advice from people that were going through it, and it convinced me to do it, because it sounds grueling, but it, you know, it's not as grueling as it sounds when you.
No, I think for those of us that haven't done it, it sounds pretty grueling that.
Oh, know, yeah.
Being poked and prodded for 2 years is quite a lot, and it, I mean, that, and a commitment in terms of just not being at home and what you can do and things that. So that in itself sounds like, you know, a big deal. But then they found you were a suitable candidate for surgery at the end of it. And what happened next?
It was 2 weeks before in July 2018. I was told I was going to go for the had to go given a date to go through it, but then when I had it, I had my right hippocampus removed and my right temporal lobe removed, and they Sorry, I'm mumbling here. It was an eight-hour operation, and I stayed in hospital for 4 nights, and then I was off work for the further 4 months after that. But the biggest problems I faced post surgery, apart from the pain, because I couldn't take any hardcore drugs, so I was only on paracetamol for the whole operation, which was quite painful. So I was in there for four nights, and then when I came home, the post-traumatic stress hit me after about a fortnight. Just the realization of what I'd been through, like, you know, like you're saying, all these testing phases and things, will it work, won't it work, and everybody's worries about me going through with it, and that hit me quite hard. And then it was the insomnia after that, so I had to take an extra a month off work, because I couldn't get enough sleep. But yeah, I mean, it's been an ordeal, but I think it's definitely life changing. So I will be 40 months seizure free and 11 months medication free on this Sunday coming.
I mean, that's an amazing result, which must be totally life changing.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah.
And how, you know, the other. Side effects of the surgery and the PTSD of those things that you're still dealing with, or is that managed? No. And did you get support for those things?
Yeah, that's the psychiatry side of the testing and things that they evaluate you as you're going through the surgery, and post surgery. So I had a checkup. It was about 4 months after surgery, just to see everything was going on, and that they were all happy with the progress. And it's been, yeah, it just settles itself down, because the problem is it's when you operate on the brain or any part of the body, it's creating major trauma. And as the body, basically the neurons are re-firing, so they need different pathways to find the activity to go through the brain to make things work. And as it's doing that, that's why you start getting things like anxiety and all different things going on, because your brain's just a bit of a mess. But it does resolve itself.
Yeah, so once the neurons have found their pathways and can establish that and their more well-trodden paths, it's all settling down, essentially, mm-hmm. in your brain. But, I mean, that you must be a pretty resilient individual, because that, the thought, I think, for any of us of getting surgery on our brain, it feels like that's the heart of us as individuals, and that's so that, you know, that is quite a that's quite a big deal. Did you realize you were so resilient before that, or is this
I think the epilepsy does make you very resilient, and just dealing with the seizures and the fact that you could hit your head and not wake up, all different things like that that run through your brain. It's sorry, excuse the pun there. I think once you've realized that you don't want to go through all of that, and you've had enough of the epilepsy and dealing with, you know, the lack of independence and all the things that it gives you, then it makes the decision a lot easier to go through it. And because they do so much testing, I think it was an 80% success rate they gave me. And once you can weigh up the pros and cons, then that's how you can make an informed decision.
Yeah, and I can understand that, and I think it's, but equally I can imagine in the run up to it, anything with your brain where there's room, you know, there's a probability of any margin for failure, must still be quite scary going into it. And I mean, I imagine your husband thinks you had good support networks to go through that as well. We should maybe give him a shout out.
No, it's been great. He was very worried. I think he was more worried than me, but that's just because it was out of his hands, out of his control, and you know, he didn't have that final say. So he was very worried. He was, I think he did something like 20,000 steps around the hospital with his with his father going around in blocks.
Oh, I bet. I can only imagine how that must be. And so, I mean, I imagine that it's been life-changing, you know, being, you know, not relying on medication, not having to deal with seizures anymore. That must be fantastic.
Yes, it was strange the first time I left the house, because if you're going away, then you always have to make sure you've got your medication with you, but you know, it's the first thing you check. But to actually leave the house without anything and not having that routine at the end of the day or the beginning of the day where you have to take something, which has been going on since the age of 9, and I'm now in my 40s, so it's been a bit life changing.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that a lot of us take for granted, that we don't have to think about those things until we're faced with that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've talked about being involved with other people online and trying to provide that support. I know you've also used sort of art and woodwork as part of your recovery and used that to raise money to support epilepsy charities. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was about a month into my recovery, and I just thought I need something just to keep me focused. I want something to do, you know, just not sit in front of the telly all the time. So I ended up digging out some of my art materials, which have been here since the art college 18 years ago, and I just started getting into my art again. And what I wanted to do, I've always talked about writing a book, but I thought with my artwork I was going to blog about my recovery to help other people going through it. And I've been continually doing that, and I'm now part of Art Map Argyle, which I'll be in Open Studios next year, hopefully. And this last Christmas I was given a pyrography set to get into doing things like wood burning. And when I was recovering, I used to take the dog for a walk up to Blarberry Woodlands. And I've always wanted to see different, you know, crafty things going through the woods. I thought that would be quite a nice thing. So I said to them that I would donate some pieces to tell my recovery story to the woods. And they're with them at the moment. They've worked out a way to mount them. They're going to put them on like posts and mount them through the woods. So that should be happening very soon.
Well, that's fantastic. It's because if people don't live in sort of Loch Ilphead or the Mid Argyll area, Blarberry Woods it's a fantastic trail. There's outdoor gym, and it's right behind the hospital, so it feels quite appropriate. But it's lovely to have artworks and things and to relate that to that recovery. And I mean, Art Map Argyle is such a fantastic organisation and initiative of the Open Studios. So it's fantastic to have for them to have a new member to join with your work. That must be lovely.
Yeah, well, I was quite surprised I got accepted, but I did go to art college. You know, there's different criteria that they want you to have to join up. But I did originally go to art college, and I've done quite a lot over the last few years. So yeah, and that was stand me in good stead, I think.
Well, I've looked at your website, and if people are interested, h2odesigns.co.uk, and it looks amazing to me.
Oh, thank you.
You're obviously very skilled and artistic, so I'm not at all surprised you've been accepted, Helen. So if people are interested, they can go and check that out, because it looks fab for that. And as a dog owner, I'm going to call out. Is it Shadow, your Siberian husky?
That's right, that's right.
So I'm sure she's a big help in your recovery. I know my doggies would be.
Yeah, definitely. I dragged him around every day up to all these lo we used to do at least one long walk a day through the recovery. So I'd do like a 3 mile walk. By the end of it, I was sort of dragging him home.
Oh, yeah. And they give that unconditional love, don't they, when you just need it as well, a bit of a cuddle and things, and it helps.
Yeah, because he wasn't very well a few weeks ago. He ended up having a stroke, so I was sympathising with him. But he's bounced back now. He's perfect again.
Oh, I'm pleased to hear that. Really pleased to hear that. And have you any idea when your artwork's going to be up in the woods?
Well, I spoke to them a couple of weeks ago, and they said that they were making a start on it over the next few weeks. So I won't. I'll find out more, but I think it's probably going to be maybe early next year by the time they get them all sorted.
I was going to say, if people are interested, maybe keep an eye out early next year for that, and look out for the art map, which I think is normally August, isn't
Yes,
it?
that's right.
August, where there's one or two weekends, so keep an eye open for that. And I think I hear you've raised funds as well with your artwork. Is it about £600?
I've raised £600 myself, and that's been split three ways, to a charity called eSucks, which provides anti-suffocation pillows for mainly children or people going through it, because you can suffocate in your sleep. So they provide the pillows, and 200 to Epilepsy Scotland, and the other 200 to the NHS in Glasgow, so the neurology department.
That's brilliant. Well done. Good on you. And I mean, not to mention all the things you're doing to raise awareness, and just you talking like this, because I think it's you even that about anti-suffocation pillows is not something, I don't think, if you're not dealing with this disorder, that you would even think about being an issue
No.
that
Well,
you
I was
had to
very unaware
consider.
of it. And even with my epilepsy, but it didn't really cross my mind. But it's something that, obviously happens quite a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's important just to get that across to all of us. So I think, with November being Epilepsy Awareness Month, hopefully we can get a bit more information out to people. And I think it's fantastic that you're prepared to talk about what you've dealt with to try and get that across to people, because not everybody wants to be that open. But we need to be aware when people might be displaying a seizure, just what might be the cause of it, and be supportive and not judgmental of those things. So I think it's fantastic that all the work that you're doing to make that to make people aware of all of that.
Yeah, I think it's because I dealt with quite a lot of stigma growing up, and lots of jobs I couldn't do because I had epilepsy, and I have had quite a lot of discrimination. And I think as you get the discrimination, you either go one way or the other. And I've just decided just to speak openly, because it's not like I can hide it. But yeah, well, at the time I couldn't.
No, well, I think it's amazing, and I think all the fundraising and things that you're doing is great. Maybe finish up and tell us what should people do if they're suffering from it in terms of, or think they might be suffering from it, in terms of getting diagnosis or treatment? What would you say to other people?
I'd say to get a diagnosis, your first protocol is probably your GP, and then they can refer you to a neurologist. And my neurologist was in Glasgow, so I had to go there quite a lot. But they will be need to be referred for lots of different tests. You'll have things like an EEG and an MRI and maybe a CT scan, so they can see the activity in the brain. And then they might start you on a medication if you've been diagnosed. And there's lots of different medications. They say that the first five medications is the best chance of it working for you. Then after you've had five failed medications, then that's when there's other routes like surgery and things out there. I think I've been on over about 12 different medications. So it's very hit and miss. You have to stick with it, and there are side effects. The charities out there, there's Epilepsy Scotland if you're looking for advice, and there's also the Epilepsy Society. Yeah, there's lots of help if you do need it.
And if anyone's thinking of the surgery, there's obviously Epilepsy Surgery Friends Facebook book
That's
page.
right.
Because I think it's important to acknowledge it can start at any age. This isn't just something you're born with and you'd have from birth. This can, this could happen to people at any age.
Yes.
So it's important to be aware of it if somebody is having symptoms that might be that might suggest this, to go and get that checked out.
Yeah,
So,
and there's so many different types of seizures as well. So I think there's about 40 different types.
oh my God. No, I mean it's just, I say, such a complex area, so many implications for people, but and much more prevalent than I realized. So thank you for just giving us a bit of awareness of it, and also that optimism of what treatments available now, that I had no idea that this was now considered a treatable disorder, that you could come out the other side with, as you have, such a great outcome. So that's real hopeful sense for people that may be suffering for it.
Yeah, it does it's only applicable with a certain amount of people with the surgery, but it's worth going through if you are a candidate, because I think it's about a third of people that get tested are actually deemed a candidate for it.
Well, so glad there's been a good outcome for you, Helen, and thank you so much for telling people all about it. That's really fantastic, and I
That's
hope it just continues to go from strength to strength for you.
Thank you.
I just want to thank Helen again for being so open and sharing her journey, and I'm so pleased that the outcome for her has been so positive. If you are suffering with epilepsy, or you know somebody who's suffering with it and you want to find out more, you can check out epilepsyscotland.org.uk. And if you're interested in seeing more of Helen's work, and the designs that she's featuring at Blarbury Woods, then check out h2odesigns.co.uk, where you can see Helen's artwork. And thank you for listening.
Podcasts.